going to start today with two readings. The first one comes from 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 8 through 11. And every once in a while, I like to read from the Living Bible because it was my mom's favorite translation. So this is from the Living Bible. And now this word to all of you. You should be like one big happy family, full of sympathy toward each other, loving one another with tender hearts and humble minds. Don't repay evil for evil. Don't snap back at those who say unkind things about you. Instead, pray for God's help for them. For we are to be kind to others, and God will bless us for it. If you want a happy, good life, keep control of your tongue and guard your lips from telling lies. Turn away from evil and do good. Try to live in peace, even if you must run after it to catch it and hold it. We add blessing and understanding to the reading of those words. The next reading I want to share with you comes from J. McDaniel's book entitled Gandhi's Hope. In it he says, there are at least two ways to welcome diversity. One is to personally get to know people of other religions, spending time with them and working together to help build local communities that are just, sustainable, and peaceful. And the second way to welcome diversity is to undertake critical yet friendly readings of other religions, even if we do not know people who belong to them. With an interest in appreciating the wisdom those religions might offer us, to get to know people of other religions and to undertake friendly readings of their tradition is akin to lighting a candle that helps brighten our small corner of the world, helping to dispel the blindness that permeates the religion. When the small candle is combined with other candles in other parts of the world, it can provide hope for a world too often torn apart by fear, hatred, and confusion. There is a great need in our world for that kind of candlelight.
This is Jim Croce, another man in the 1970s who looked towards Eastern religions.
Which way are you coming? Which side will you be on? Will you still be
flowers turn to thorns, your olive branches
My message this morning is entitled, The Dangers of Exclusive Religion. Charles Kimball, renowned professor of comparative religion at Wake Forest University, opens his book, When Religion Becomes Evil, saying this, Religion is arguably the most powerful and pervasive force on earth. Throughout history, religious ideas and commitments have inspired individuals and communities of faith to transcend narrow self-interest in pursuit of higher values and truths. The record of history shows that noble acts of love, self-sacrifice, and service to others are frequently rooted in deeply held religious worldviews. At the same time, history clearly shows that religion has often been linked directly to the worst examples of human behavior. Questions about why people do bad things, sometimes unspeakably evil things, in the name of religion, those questions are not new, of course. Theologians and philosophers have long wrestled with the questions about the sources and manifestations of individual and corporate evil. Given that it is certainly true that theologians and philosophers have long wrestled with questions about what causes good religion to go bad, it should be of no surprise that there are a multitude of conclusions about what exactly it is that causes negative and hurtful practices in different faiths. Many, if not most, of those conclusions are actually true, or at least they're grounded in reality. However, it seems to me that there is one conclusion that does not get enough attention. Possibly, not surprisingly, I'd like us to take a little bit of time to look and think about that one conclusion a little bit. It may be that part of why there is so little addressing the issue going on, the issue that I'd like to talk about, and maybe that so little of addressing it goes about because the three biggest religions in the world tend to practice some form of it. The it that I'm talking about, which the title of my talk is probably already given away, is exclusive religion. Well, while it's still several months away, I'd like to share a Thanksgiving story from the early English settlements in North America to gain just a little bit of understanding about what exclusive religions look like and how they impact us. So in the early 1600s, the settlers of Jamestown very quickly ran into more problems than they expected to be running into. They found themselves, all of themselves, on the edge of starvation. And this gets ugly here. As winter rolled around, they were so hungry, this is documented, they actually started digging up graves for food. Put simply, things were as horrible as they could imagine, and they were getting worse. So a local tribe of Native Americans, indigenous Americans, saw the suffering of the English in Jamestown. They took pity on them. They brought them food and they taught them how to successfully grow crops. Ultimately, the cause of their help, the crisis, was averted. Now, you might imagine that the English were thrilled. They must have been very grateful. I mean, you would think, right? But sadly, not exactly. Let me read to you an excerpt from a diary of one of the Jamestown folks. If it had not pleased God to put terror into those savages' hearts, we would all have perished by those wild and cruel pagans, being in the weak state that we were in. Really? The folks who showed you compassion, they are the savages. The folks who helped you end your need to practice cannibalism, they are wild and cruel. The absurdity of it all is practically palpable. Logic had been unceremoniously tossed out the window in favor of religious fervor. It's all right there in that diary. The English called the ones who helped them pagans, and none of the natives, indigenous people's gods were what the English considered to be the one true God. So their exclusive way of understanding theology and religion told them that no matter how good or kind or caring someone had been to them, if they didn't believe like they believe, they must be evil. So, in that, good deeds, empirical evidence, logic be damned. The only way to explain the actions of folks who believe differently than you when you practice an exclusive religion without having to consider that someone can actually be good without your specific understanding of God is to dismiss facts and experience, and then to simply chalk the savage's behavior up to the actions of your God. Now, do you have any evidence that that's what occurred? Well, no, but you don't need it, but you just believe. We actually have seen it in modern politics in the U.S., sometimes more subtly than others, but frequently it's up front and up center. The bastardization of Christianity and how it is now manipulated to serve as a tool to support things that are very much not biblical is nothing short of sickening. It's one of the key dangers of non-inclusive religion, of exclusive religion. We see it time and time again. We saw it several years ago when a newly elected president was trying to keep folks who practice Islam out of the country. After all, they're savages, right? I mean, they don't believe the same conservative exclusive God, so they must be wild and cruel. A belief in a God of an exclusive religion, sort of you're either with us or against us kind of spirituality, is absolutely perfect tool for politicians who have nefarious plans. As I suggested earlier, the practice of an exclusive religion almost always ultimately leads to logic being unceremoniously tossed out the window in favor of religious fervor. If you are a politician and you know that you want to get people to vote for and support laws which actually work against them, you really need them to lose interest in logic when it comes to those specific things. Now, what do we know of that has a proven track record for causing people to be willing to throw logic out the window? Well, hopefully clearly at this point from my earlier story, one of the answers is exclusively practiced religion. It really should be of no surprise that the more powerful a politician becomes, the more likely they are to publicly practice the kind of religion that encourages their constituents to pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Frighteningly, many have developed it as a manipulative tool so well that they've managed to get folks to not question them when they're actually doing things that are very much not biblical or simply immoral for that matter. In his book, and I'm going to just destroy his name. This book, Create Your Own Language, his name is Daniele Bolive. He says this: the dogmatic certainty of being the only ones to have access to the truth makes the adherence of the exclusive approach intolerance at heart. whereas individuals who follow multiple paths have no problem with those who wish to only follow the one. The courtesy is usually not returned, however, since the believers in a single path typically want everyone to abandon their ideals and embrace their own. He goes on to point out, the inclusive and exclusive approach are not simply different. Simply different and equally legitimate points of view, the exclusive and the inclusive. Inclusive are not simply different or equally legitimate points of view. This is not a matter of personal taste, he says. In one case, we are faced with a rigid choice precluding all other choices, and in the other, we are allowed full freedom of choice as long as we don't infringe on the freedoms of others. For me, that points to not only the dangers of an exclusive religion, but also to the advantages of an inclusive religious outlook. At the core of inclusive religious outlooks is the understanding that no one can ever fully know the truth. In fact, the more we learn about the truth, the more we begin to realize the complexity and vastness of it and how unlikely it is that anyone could ever fully understand it. And for that reason, many spiritual practices, from Taoists to Christian scholars to Native Americans, speak of life and the divine power as a great mystery. It is a recognition that while things of the divine might sometimes be detected, they really can never be fully understood. Those who practice this kind of spirituality are much more likely to see it as a lifelong pursuit that it will always and ultimately be a work in progress. Those practicing exclusive religion, on the other hand, tend to believe that they can, and frequently already have, arrived at a full understanding of the truth. There's another name that I'm going to butcher. Fourth century pagan apologist Symmachus put it this way. What does it matter by which wisdom each of us arrives at the truth? Is it not possible that only one road leads to so sublime? I messed that up. It is not possible, he says, that only one road leads to so sublime a truth. The bottom line is that the willingness of a typical exclusive believer to throw logic out the door, paired with the pursuit of power by those at the top of the pecking order, almost always ends in various forms of chaos, removal of freedoms, hate groups, killings, wars, you name it. I would like to conclude with thoughts from the first gentleman's name who I butchered, Bolelli, who says in his book, tolerating repressive efforts is not a sign of open-mindedness or enlightened multiculturalism. It is just stupid. Wish you'd have been more clear about what he meant. Tolerating those who want to ban tolerance is suicidal. Freedom doesn't extend to those who wish for nothing better than to restrict freedom for others. The challenge we face is to combine the ability to be open-minded with an iron will. Openness without strength, he says, is useless. Strength without openness is oppression. The love for freedom needs to go hand in hand with strong values. The future of our world depends on developing religions able to bring these qualities together. My challenge to each of us and to this spirit community is that we stay focused on openness and pluralism, that we do not do it halfway, but rather that we do it with energy, intelligence, creativity, and an iron will, along with a bit of humility and compassion. And if we do, and I know we can promise you, we will have an amazing adventure. Share with you another prayer from my prayer book. This one is entitled 41, On the Divisions We Have Created. Let us bow our heads. We've been conditioned to look at the world through an either-or division. Either you are with us or, either you are right or, either you are straight or. Our oversimplification of the immense complexity of creation has left us with divisions that are not real. They are not a reflection of the realities woven into creation. We have made our own creation less complex, less sophisticated, less inclusive. Our false either-or compartmentalization creates in us these divisions. Divisions based on the faulty premise that creation is simple, that creation always has easy answers. Divisions that deny the value of the rich and immense complexity of creation. May we see that life is complex. May we see that it is rare for life to be so either or. May we learn to value and celebrate the complexity and differences it creates. And may this insight pull us back together, break down these human-made walls of division, and make us whole. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, knowing that we are one. And may your life be full of love and happiness, and may your words and deeds share that love and happiness with all of those you meet. Thank you.
Thank you.